So I was requested today to speak on the topic of sadachar or Vaishnav etiquette. And, the Chaitanya Charitamrita is showing so many intricacies of Vaishnav etiquette, especially very relevant to us because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all his associates are practicing bhakti yoga in the way that, well, as the perfect model for us, as the way we would like to do. But they are devotees with shaved heads, sikhas, dhotis. Many of their exchanges are still the same today in this movement. Whereas if we look at the situation in the Srimad Bhagavatam, then sometimes we're dealing with Vedic culture, which is different. We're dealing with royalty. We cannot understand all the intricacies of all the customs. They may not always exactly apply to us in the same way, because we're living in such a different age. So in one sense, when especially we look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're seeing a model for our own conduct. So we're reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila, Chapter 4, entitled Sanatan Goswami Visits the Lord, Text 118. Ma jane samudra valu hanache agni sama. Jane samudra vala hana chakni sama. Actually, looking at it again, I think the pronunciation is hayache. Yeah, that's what it is. It's a form that I don't know, but usually when that sign is there in Bengali, it becomes, as it says, hana becomes haya. So you would think it becomes Hayachi. And it makes actually more sense from what the Bengali language is. Hayachi. Yeah.
H-O-Y.
Huh?
H-O-Y.
Yeah, I think it's pronounced like Hayachi actually. Yeah. Yeah, and the N like that becomes a Y. Ma jana samudre valu Hayache agni sama.
Bhagyane samudra valu hayache agni sama.
Sei patte sanatan karila gamana.
Sei patte sanatan karila gamana.
Majane samudra valu hayache agni sama.
Bhagyane samudra valu
Sei patte sanatan karila gamana.
Sei patte sanatan karila gamana.
Madhyane samudra valo hoyeche agni sama.
Madhyane samudra valo hoyeche agni sama.
Sei patte sanatan karila gamana.
Sei patte sanatan.
Me
Hayache was
Agnisama
as hot as fire.
Sepati
by that path.
Sanatana
Sanatan Goswami.
Korilagamana
came.
Translation.
At noon, the sand on the beach was as hot as fire, but Sanatan Goswami came by that path. Continuing the next verses. Overwhelmed by joy at being called by the Lord, Sanatan Goswami did not feel that his feet were burning in the hot sand. Although the soles of his feet were blistered because of the heat, he nevertheless went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There he found that the Lord, having taken his lunch, was resting. Sanatan Goswami went to meet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we see here that he came by a very difficult road because the sand is very, very hot. And since he wasn't wearing any shoes, he was burning his feet. So Lord Chaitanya was resting. Sanatan Goswami got a little bit of the remnants of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's food, it says here. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu awoke and the Lord inquired, "By which path have you come?" Sanatan Goswami replied, "I've come on the path along the beach." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "How did you come along the beach where the sand is so hot? Why didn't you come by the path in front of the Simhadwara gate? It's very cool. The hot sand must have blistered your soles. Now you cannot walk. How did you tolerate it?" Sanatan Goswami replied, "I did not feel much pain, nor did I know there were blisters because of the heat. I have no right to pass by the Simhadwara, for the servants of Jagannath are always coming and going there. The servants are always coming and going without interval. If I touch them, I shall be ruined." Purport. Herein it is very clearly indicated that priests performing deity worship should be very careful to keep themselves completely pure and not be touched by outsiders. Sanatan Goswami and Haridas Thakur, thinking themselves malechas and yavanas because of their past association with Muslims, did not enter the temple or even travel on the path in front of the temple gate. It is customary for the priests of temples in India not even to touch outsiders or enter the deity room after having been touched. This is a very important item in temple worship. Next verse. Having heard all these details, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, greatly pleased, spoke as follows. "My dear Sanatan, although you are the deliverer of the entire universe, and although even the demigods and great saints are purified by touching you, it is the characteristic of a devotee to observe and protect the Vaishnava etiquette. Maintenance of the Vaishnava etiquette is the ornament of a devotee. If one transgresses the law of etiquette, people make fun of him, and thus he is vanquished in both this world and the next. By observing the etiquette, you have satisfied my mind. Who else but you could show this example?" Om Jnanati Marandasya Gyanandana Salakaya Chakshurumilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchatattvamakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namama Bhakti Shaktikam Vanchakalpatarubhyacha Sakripa Sindhubhyevacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasavi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. In ordinary mundane dealings, there is also etiquette. We are trained by our parents. Children sometimes are known as, some children are known as enfants terribles, right? Or the kind of child that just speaks out in public and embarrasses the whole family by saying something very truthful, but something that's not supposed to be disclosed, like some devotee was sometimes watching television and you know what to say. One day the temple management spoke on this matter in front of his son and said that, like, well, we heard you're sometimes watching television. He said, no, only videos. And the child said, very, he said, no, you know, you forgot. Yesterday you were watching this movie or whatever, you know. So it's like, some children do it all the time. In all kinds of, I mean, can't necessarily find the best example right now, but you know what I'm talking about. So over the years we are trained to be polite. If we would not be polite, what wouldn't we say? Right? But we are learning to be polite. Someone comes to the door around, let's say, close to dinner time. I think, oh no, it's Dan. Oh, how nice. Nice that you came. Do come in. I hope you're not staying long. Yes, please, have a seat. They always come around dinner, you know. Well, would you like a drink, maybe, etc.? So how do I get rid of them? You know, these kind of social things. But there's politeness, the etiquette, things you're supposed to say. And the whole world goes through that ritual. Right. Aunties are coming, this, that, and like, I mean, I always thought this was the greatest horror when I was a kid, you know, the kissing aunties. I didn't know how to escape all this etiquette, you know. I had one auntie, you know, she had a mustache, you know, she was shaving it. So, you know, her kisses were really something. Nightmares I had. Anyhow, do not want to go too much into the so-called funny details. But the real point is clear that in mundane etiquette, there is an element of hypocrisy, an element of acting, an element of performing drama. And if you would show your real feelings, if you would reveal your heart, right, something really not so nice would come out, and of course there would be a world war in no time. So it has a function, but it has an element of hypocrisy in it, right? And we all are aware of that. So Vaishnava etiquette is of a different nature. Of course, Vaishnava etiquette may be applied on many levels according to the advancement of a Vaishnava. And as the Vaishnava is less advanced, his application of Vaishnava etiquette may resemble to some extent mundane politeness. There may be an element of
acting externally in one way, going through the motions of offering respect, but internally not experiencing it. And going through the motions of expressing humility, but internally being in a totally different mood, actually. Yeah. And even sincerely trying to submit oneself in the process to the process of the etiquette. And it is a fact that this is correct in Krishna consciousness, because we have two means by which we are becoming purified. Prabhupada called it the two tracks, as the two tracks of the railway, the Bhagavad Vidhi and the Pancharatriki Vidhi. So the Bhagavad Vidhi involves kirtanam, sravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, hearing, chanting, and remembering in particular, and all the other six of the nine processes of devotional service are included in the Pancharatriki Vidhi. Now, the Pancharatriki Vidhi is sometimes described as these are the external duties that regulate one's external behavior. And by doing so, gradually one's mentality also is changing and is being adjusted. We're bowing down in front of the deity, which is, and we make a full flat dandavat, right, which is obviously meant as a token of our surrender. Right? I'm falling in the dust at your feet. It's like very clear. Even that, right, even that act of humility, we can perform it in a proud way. Right? It is amazing how we manage to, within everything, experience pride in our heart. Being self-conscious, right? And even as we are down on the ground and make a full stretch, we are thinking of how many people will be seeing my obeisances right now. It takes time to become authentic in this Vaishnava etiquette. And it takes time to actually come to the point where it is genuine, really felt from the heart. But this is what it must be. So it is not merely invoking some sort of sentiment where we are trying to get into the humble mood by feeling more humble and in that way put the heart into it. A little bit maybe, that may also be there. But the major approach is to understand the philosophy, to deeply philosophically understand our position. Like Prabhupada said, to accept that we are more humble than a blade of grass is not at all difficult if one considers that we are only the size of one ten-thousandth the tip of a hair, a lot smaller than a blade of grass. Right? So if one is naturally understanding one's position as being anu, atomic in size, very insignificant, an infinitesimal spark of the Lord who is Vibhu, all-pervading, then we understand how insignificant we are, and how truly we are a blade of grass on the waves of time. We have nothing in our hands, and we don't know what will happen, what we are meant to be. It is Krishna who will decide what we will become in this life, not us. Sanatana Goswami,
was considering himself very fallen, and it's very interesting that he is considering himself so fallen because of his previous association with the Muslims, an external reason in a sense, right? It's like his external association, just as Haridas Thakur is mentioned, was considering himself so fallen for having taken birth in a Muslim family. But all like external reasons, I mean, not like thinking, well, now I've left that behind, I've surrendered now, I'm now a devotee, I mean, scriptures say that one should not be judged by one's, according to one's previous life. Being a devotee is like taking a new birth. I mean, it's almost like it doesn't count anymore. And it's quite realistic, right, to feel that our material life is almost like another birth. I really sometimes feel like that when I have to say to people that I'm from Holland, because sometimes I feel like, well, but I took birth again in Vrindavan, right? In a sense, right? I was there, and there I started a whole new life, and I grew up in a whole different atmosphere, and it feels a little awkward to say I'm from Holland, because I'm actually not totally identifying with that. Although I know when I come to Holland, then it looks like more like I am from Holland. So here, you know, everybody thinks I'm from Holland. But in a way, I don't totally identify with that. I'm just giving my own situation as an example. So how amazing that these great personalities were identifying with that material identity, and they should really be much more transcendental to their previous conditioning than some fallen soul like myself. Right? They truly were on the transcendental, pure spiritual platform, and we see that. But one can see that everyone accepts the role that the Lord has given. We see Sanatana Goswami is not trying to be something he's not. He is simply accepting, yes, I've become associated with the with these Muslims, right? And that is a stigma on me which I have. Therefore, I should take a very humble position. So a Vaishnava should, although in one sense he's not identifying with that past, not socially take a position which may cause agitation in the mind of others. Srila Prabhupada also points out that Haridas Thakur and Sanatana Goswami never tried to enter the temple of Lord Jagannath because they also didn't want to cause agitation. They wanted to not assert their position. They were ready to take the lower position. So all throughout, the Sanatana Goswami and Haridas Thakur in this section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita are showing this kind of humility. When all the Vaishnavas are invited to sit with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on a raised platform and taking prasadam, Haridas and Sanatana Goswami refuse. They say, no, we cannot sit there. We are not qualified. When invited to take prasadam with the Lord on another occasion, we'll take the remnants. Right? We are not qualified to take. So in this way, always taking that very humble position. And we see that this is what pleases Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Elsewhere, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stated that he was being purchased. He was being purchased by humility. So humility is a great quality. And we see, therefore, in our sampradaya that the acharyas are all very humble. Sanatana Goswami is very
strict about his humility here. And we see, for example, great exalted personalities like Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who didn't want to accept any worship, who didn't want to accept disciples, reluctantly accepted two disciples, but even then was very aloof of the externals. We see how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur being so extraordinarily qualified, without a doubt, just by the practice of his life, such an absorption, working in the day, sleeping so little, writing books at night, about 100 different varieties of literatures in a lifetime. It's inconceivable. So what a wonderful Vaishnava. And yet he says, I will not accept any worship. I will not have anyone take the remnants of my foodstuff. And like that he speaks. We see in the writings of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Jiva Dharma, we see descriptions of the Vaishnavas and how they live so simple in their little huts, right? Practically don't have anything, very much in that mood of the six Goswamis, so simple and so far away from all the worldly entanglement and just and of profit, distinction, adoration, position, facility. They're just very much turning away from all these things. They were all giving up, even the Brahmins were giving up their Brahmin threads and just simply wearing, not even wearing the saffron cloth as a symbol of great renunciation, but rather just wearing some undyed cloth, right? Not even bleached and white, but sort of grayish white, right? Short, simple. Gaurakishore Das Babaji taking the cloth discarded in the road, even from the corpses, right? The discarded cloth from that. You know, like, in an inconceivable kind of lifestyles. Very, very much stressing this extraordinary humility. And then if we see the model that exists in our modern days, then it seems to be so different. We seem to live different. Yes, we make humility an issue. Yes, we speak about it. We meditate on it. But we're not going to the extent of the predecessor acharyas, right, to externally try and put it into practice to a point of like total consistency in all situations. No, I'm fallen, not qualified. No, don't offer anything to me. I'm just simply, no, I cannot accept any worship, any respect or anything. I'm no authority. I am absolutely unqualified. Kind of mood. So how different is the situation now? I think the interesting point in our Sampradaya where the turnaround really came, well, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a very different person because he was in the world, but at the same time very, very much absorbed in Krishna Katha. So he was so much absorbed in Krishna Katha, although he was in the world as a Grihastha, that it just stood out, right? That here he is as a Grihastha, but his absorption in Krishna Katha is so great that it's clearly a spiritual personality, without a doubt. And all those other things have no meaning, right? Like that. Then, of course, we see that many of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were also householders. So it's not that there is no tradition of householders either in our movement. in our Sampradaya. But still, we see this very renounced example of our immediate acharyas coming down, the six Goswamis, and then after that. And then we see with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we see first a display of extraordinary renunciation, following the same vow as Haridas Thakur, to chant, I always forget if it is it 10 billion names? That, I mean, the total, it was 300 and...
10 million.
Is it million? Yeah, I was always thinking million, billion, and then I have to start calculating, and I don't calculate so quick. But it's 333,333, whatever. It's 33333 names, actually. Not 300,000 names, but it said 3333. All trees. Names a day. And then at the end, one more. Right? One more. And then you come to a million names in a month, I think. Something like that. Is that the calculation? It's mathematics. And I've lost that. I used to be good at mathematics, but not anymore. That part of my brain has died, I think. what to do? Anyhow, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did the same thing. He chanted that number of rounds in a vow that took 10 years to complete, approximately. An inconceivable thing to do. Very, very difficult. Especially, I mean, when we hear about Haridas Thakur, it's absolutely inconceivable how he could do it. But then, if we see that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is like even closer to us, you know, it was like almost yesterday, right? You just look back a little bit. He did it also. And then afterwards, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur went to preach, and he styled his preaching mission in a totally different way. He came in Vrindavan in that car with the overcoat and the silk cloth, and all the Babaji's were just like, and the rumble was so loud that he, and some were saying loud enough for him to hear that, like, is this a follower, right, of Rupa Goswami? Right? And he simply replied, and he said, yes, a follower of Rupa Goswami, not some cheap imitator, but one who takes the spirit of Rupa Goswami to spread the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu over the entire world. Right. Bang. Right. So intense and strong. And so it is really Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who makes that bridge from tradition to modern times. And then we see Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada says, I would be satisfied to sit under a tree. And Prabhupada said his favorite residence, and that was after ISKCON had already a number of nice dwellings for Srila Prabhupada. He said, my favorite residence is Mayapur, that simple bhajan kutia, that hut, which is now not as simple as it used to be. And it has gradually grown into a somewhat more developed thing. It was more simple then even than it is now. And Prabhupada said, that's the best place to live. He said, very much in the mode of goodness, very nice. Not the fancier rooms in Bombay or in Los Angeles or in other places or such nice quarters where they're... in many quarters, anyway, like in Bombay. How long did Prabhupada really stay in Bombay? It's almost like, you know, a few times only. We go there to Prabhupada's rooms and all the opulence. It's like, wow, Prabhupada stay in all this opulence. Well, it was like, you know, we have stayed more often in the guest rooms up here than Prabhupada stayed in those rooms, right? A few times. But anyhow, whatever, we see how Prabhupada was living in a totally different setting, in a totally different setting, and accepting all this worship. So Prabhupada really points out the difference between the sannyasi in the tradition of the Bhajanandi and the sannyasi in the tradition of the Gostiyanandi. He said the Bhajanandi sannyasi withdraws from the world in a very austere and simple condition and is very much concerned with his relationship with Krishna. So the traditional role, which is actually very nice. I mean, it is very nice if one can just simply withdraw from the headaches of the world and live in a nice forest and just remember Krishna. Boy, I mean, I'm attracted. And it sounds nice. And then come and maybe from there share, but very much in one's own bhajan, staying in a holy place. It certainly is soothing to the heart. Whereas Prabhupada explains that the Gostiyanandi is in the middle of the world, in the middle of followers, in the middle of trying to encourage these followers. He is therefore accepting so much opulence, position, simply for the sake of encouraging others. Prabhupada said, I would be happy under the tree, but you would not. And how would we be able to attract people of the world? Therefore, wanted like buildings, wanted like the big, big temple in Mayapur, and so many things. So it is sometimes difficult for us to keep a balance. On the one hand, be part of this movement, where one sometimes has to become an authority. Like Satsarupa Maharaj was saying to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, sometimes you were mentioning that when you first came to New York and you were all alone, that you were studying the situation in America, and that actually in those days you were much more happy, right? Much more happy than you are now when you are having thousands of disciples. And Prabhupada said, yes, yes, I was much more happy then because I didn't have to find fault with anyone. Okay. And which is like the most transcendental platform, the platform of appreciating all the Vaishnavas, of simply seeing how everyone somehow or other is within Krishna's arrangement and is by that arrangement somehow or other advancing, some very slow, others more quick, who have received the direct mercy of the process of devotional service. Those who have received the mercy of the process of devotional service are advancing very quick and very nicely. So in that way, the Uttama Adhikari will see. And then to find fault, that is an austerity. And to come down to the smaller vision, the vision in this world, the distinction where we say, well, you know, this is a little better than that, or they should do this. Difficult. So we're seeing how Srila Prabhupada perfectly was able to maintain the very broad transcendental vision, the very broad transcendental mood of service, and then sometimes come down into the petty issues of the material world. And then within all the pettiness that exists in the material world, where so many people are trying to assert their greatness and their superiority over other, Prabhupada was ready to establish the superiority of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya in so many ways, and roared as a lion in a spirit of humility, and sat on that silver throne in Gujarat, right, when that local king offered him this huge silver throne, with an expression on his face of like, there is an element of suffering in that face, right? In that expression. There's an element of suffering in the expression. Suffering from, here I am, sitting on this huge silver throne. Right? I'm not enjoying this, right? But I'm doing it as my duty. Right? Very much so. And very humble expression. So, within the Sankirtan movement, we do take positions. Within the organized mission of Krishna consciousness, we do take positions of importance. But yet, we must, within that, maintain our humility and be very careful that we are conducting ourselves in that way. Now, even when we are trying like that, we will still may meet some Vaishnavas who will feel like, well, you know, why are you taking that position? And they may feel disturbed. Right? And we're encountering that also. I've encountered it from day one. The first time I came in charge of devotees was 1 week after I joined, and I was in charge of serving prasad, and then one devotee had the splooch technique, you know, the technique of just throw the sabji on the plate, and I just said something, and like, wow, a thunderstorm over my head. It continued like that. I became a temple commander, and one devotee from France, the French accent has sometimes a sharp touch, you know, I think, that he had. He said, you think you are chief, you think you are a big chief, you think you are a big chief, you know, big chief. It sounds really intense, right? You are nothing. It sounds like heavier than the American accent, you know, it's like the finesse, right? I'd never even spoken to him yet, you know. And he just comes out of a room, right? Comes out of a room. So I really was shocked by that. And I was sitting later downstairs in the office thinking, boy, what was that? And I started to think, he must be my karma. he must be my karma. I didn't do anything to him. It must be for something I've done to somebody else, you know, maybe to all the other people, right? So I must, even although now I am the temple commander, I have my stripes here, you know, like, I guess I have to try and conduct myself more humble. Still, it's like been difficult. Because we have our nature, and I guess I have something Dutch, which means, you know, brash and outspoken, and just like not known for its sensitivity, you know, in like about other people's feelings, but just sort of like, boom, you know, here it is, you know. It's like, poof, and then we get also the reactions, right? How can he speak? Like, who does he think he is? You know, rah, 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 rah. Pull him down, lynch him. You know, so I've also learned that a little bit, but I'm still learning. Trying to satisfy the Vaishnavas. So there was a time when I was thinking like, well, you know, I have to do my duty and I must go forward in representing Prabhupada's teachings, and not everyone may agree. What can I do? You can't please everybody. Kind of mood, which is reality. Then later, I thought like, yes, but maybe I should still try to please everybody, right? So I'm trying, but it's impossible. It is really impossible. But we try to satisfy all. But in the end, we can never compromise satisfying Krishna and satisfying our spiritual master. And that's where it stops. Right? We can try to satisfy everyone, but not to the point where we stop satisfying Krishna and our spiritual master. But still, this being sensitive to the Vaishnavas, in taking positions of leadership and trying to take the humble platform we must take. So we are here taking all kinds of roles, and they will only be successful if we have that mood. As soon as we become insensitive to the desire of the general body of devotees to see humility and really demonstrate it, and if we become insensitive to it, even although we internally may not act out of pride, we may just act out of duty, still it will cause so much disturbance. So for the sake of inspiring the Vaishnavas, creating faith, and for the sake of our own protection, we must always take the trouble of taking the humble position, also externally, as much as possible. But we cannot do so to the extent of giving up and taking responsibility for the preaching mission. And if everyone says, no, I will not be a temple president, no, I'm not qualified for that, then we have no temple president. If everyone says, no, I'm not qualified to take sannyas is such an exalted thing, then we have no sannyasis, right? If everyone says, no, I cannot initiate, nobody can initiate, who's qualified, then we have no gurus, right? And then in the end, everyone will just be sitting there without any leader, and it's like, and people will start saying, we gotta go this way, no, we gotta go that way, we gotta do this. And whereas some people have to be the authority, and so that there is so that we can unite. Otherwise, our movement will splinter and break up in no time, and no more movement left. Right. So these are some of the intricacies of how humility functions in a society. Just one last point. Like when I first joined, right, as a new bhakta, I was allowed, you know, the temple commander said, you're very lucky, you're getting the mercy, you can sweep the office of the temple president. And I even felt like that, you know, I even felt like, wow, I get the mercy. Of course, that didn't last very long, you know. Surely, who does he think he is, you know? Right? At least internally, I start thinking like that. I think it's difficult to maintain that mood, you know, that one thinks that, like, wow, I'm allowed to sweep the office of the temple president. How much mercy. So it's very easy to, when one is really at the very bottom of the ladder, to take the humble position. But we can't stay at the bottom of the ladder. Right? We are, just by time, gaining in seniority, etc. And then it becomes more and more complex to find the right balance between taking responsibility in the preaching mission and therefore taking on leadership, and at the same time remaining humble. Very fine line. I guess it must be achieved by ongoing endeavor to improve. That's the best I can, the suggestion I can offer at this point. Maybe Platinanda Maharaj can guide me and give me a better instruction of how to proceed. Or any one of you, really. So if there's any questions or comments, then.
Vaishnavi ticket. Can you explain a little more about can deal with the devotee from different Vaishnava Sampradaya.
A different Sampradaya or the same Sampradaya but another. Okay, so we stay within the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya but another mat within that. Well, I think there are two considerations. The first one is the principle. And on the level of principle, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are all in the same line. They're part of the same Sampradaya. And the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is coming down through that Sampradaya. So in this way, various groups of Gaudiya Vaishnavas are recipients and representatives of the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that is maybe the principle. But then there's also history. Right? And the history is also a criterion. So we have two criteria. We have the principle and the history. So sometimes we meet people from other Gaudiya groups who are wanting to discuss the principle. How can there be separation? I mean, we are all, same family. Fine, the principle. But history cannot be ignored. History is a very relevant factor. So the history is that Srila Prabhupada felt the need to start his own institution, separate from the Gaudiya Math once again. Although he was preserving the teachings of his spiritual master in that separate institution, he felt the need. That's one consideration. Subsequently, Srila Prabhupada interacted with the other Vaishnavas, his god brothers in particular, and certain differences arose, where Prabhupada felt that at times he felt that he was being diminished in the eyes of his disciples. Some statements were brought to Prabhupada that some of his God brothers were saying Swamiji was successful because he was a businessman. He was always an expert businessman, not because he was so spiritually exalted or powerful or special, but he was a good organizer and a good businessman, and therefore he became successful. Prabhupada felt that these kind of moods were injuring his disciples. It wasn't not even something that hurt him or was unpleasant to him, but he felt this is like doing direct damage. When in a session, one particular group of devotees were invited in one Gaudiya Math, and this was organized in the early days by Achyutananda. At that time, there was a public address by saying how amazing it was that now those who were from a lecture birth were also Vaishnavas. And Prabhupada made this statement later. He was not there. But when the devotees came back, he said, all who were there, their spiritual life has been scarred. And he said, has been scarred. So Prabhupada took that very serious. And when a number of his god brothers were opposing and actively working to try and stop ISKCON from obtaining land in Mayapur, Prabhupada took that very, very serious. Right? Took that really like we are not being accepted, and there is just not the same transcendental vision of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is not considering the bodily condition. Anyone who chants the holy name is to be considered a Vaishnava and so forth, and we should no longer look at the bodily platform. So Prabhupada was therefore feeling more and more a need to separate and gave certain directions to separate. After Prabhupada, there is a further history. After Prabhupada left the planet, then there's more interaction. There are also certain tensions and difficulties where mutual respect was not there. where sometimes some devotees were reinitiated while their guru was in good standing, so many things. And even up to the day of today, we are this history is still alive. I think on the basis of the principle, we hope that one day the time will come when we can have deep, loving, open Vaishnav relationships, preach Krishna consciousness side by side, you know, and not considering at all, you know, whether you are from this Gaudiya connection or that Gaudiya connection. We are all preaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. But that can never be done by a declaration, you know. Like sometimes some members of these groups or of others come and just say, you are all narrow-minded and discriminating and not accepting and just like, you know, as if you have the monopoly. I mean, we should... Of course, nowadays there are groups outside who think they have the monopoly. You know, it used to be ISKCON who thought they had the monopoly. Now there are others who think they have monopoly. But spiritual life is not a monopoly game. Right? Really, what it should be is we should be very, very mature and very sensitive in Vaishnav etiquette. And we should start a deep dialogue. You know, some time ago there was one former ISKCON sannyasi who gave up his sannyas and just recently reconfirmed his sannyas. And then he felt like he wanted to solve the situation. So he sent letters saying like, allow our Vaishnavas to preach in your temples. And we got. So yeah, but that's not, it doesn't work like that. At first, we should have a serious dialogue and hear each other out, right? And take each other seriously. Unless there is a forum wherein one takes each other's issues seriously and starts to work on resolving each other's concerns, how can one come any closer? So that's historical, right? So one has to solve the problems of history first. And once they're solved, then we can act according to the principle. And that day will be wonderful because we're all Gaudiya Vaishnavas are tired of this bickering, of this division, etc. But unless we try and resolve the issues of the history, what can we do? What can we do? As they say in Dutch, we cannot let them eat the cheese of our bread. Yeah. Sorry, you know, it's an old Dutch principle. You can tolerate a lot, right? As a Dutchman, you know. But there are limits, right? Not the cheese of our bread, all right? Sorry. Yeah. Any other questions?
Sure. All right, it seems to me in the beginning when we come to the movement, it's very natural for us to be humble, and actually in this way we are more or less following the etiquette. But in my own case, very shortly, I feel, okay, now I'm part of ISKCON, now I'm part of the family. So we see ourselves, for taking an example, we go and we beat kirtans, start beating kirtans when they're senior vaishnavas without being asked. So in this way, we lose this humility, and in this way lose the etiquette.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if you could maybe speak something about how we can keep this etiquette in our mm-hmm. practical life.
My perspective is slightly different. In the beginning, that's all right. In the beginning, when we come to this movement, it's not that we are more humble. We're in a more humble position, and therefore acting humble to some extent. But our concept of humility is also very small. As we are longer in the movement, our understanding of what humility really is grows quite a bit and deepens a lot and becomes much broader, etc. So but there are more intricacies. Now, should we always stay in the background and wait till we're asked and let only the senior devotees lead, or should we sometimes also lead? Should we also
take, not that we just jump right in front of everyone, but should we also take some level of leadership? There's a necessity for that. If nobody comes up out of the, well, rank and file, to use such a word, you know, if nobody comes up, then how will there be a growth, right? You cannot overnight just grow into a leader. One must also learn. So these things are refined. And yes, it's not... At one point, one can take a little more initiative. But still, one gives some preference. Right? So it becomes more subtle like that. All right.
Well, I agree with you. But also, yeah, there's the other aspect. It's like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, that he wanted to take an initiative. And he was feeling he wanted to write Chaitanya Charitamrita. But first of all, he went to the deity and asked an indication that he was authorized to do it. And then he also went to the senior devotees and asked for their blessing.
Yeah.
So of course one can take some initiative, but one should also have it confirmed by those who are senior.
True.
And that will make, that will actually be much more authorized.
Yeah.
And if it's authorized, then the blessing will pour down. Otherwise, to do things is probably right in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And sometimes someone may do something like become a spiritual master, but if it's actually not sufficiently authorized, then the person may have some difficulty. So aspect of authorization is there. And it's more than just an official stamp.
Sure.
It's also the heartfelt blessings of the seniors.
Yeah, I understand. I guess there are different things. I mean, when you speak about leading a kirtan is one thing. When you speak about leading, what the example you're giving is more, much more serious. I think for some things, maybe, it's more like a question to you. I think for some things, devotees may take some initiative, but with a good sense of giving preference to the senior devotees. And in other matters which are of more serious nature, taking serious responsibility, one must more formally ask and more formally get the permission and blessings, etc. And other things, leading a kirtan may be a little less formal. But some etiquette must be always observed there, like that, something like that. And is that a reasonable point?
Yeah? But even there, even for some lesser, there should be a good sense of the mood, because everything depends on the mood.
Yeah.
Even success, what we're going to do, really depends on the mood. But we have the feeling that, you know, even if it's somewhat official, we think, well, there are many senior devotees here, so maybe, you know, I should get some, if I'm not authorized by some authority here, then maybe I should inquire if it's proper for me to actually do it.
Yeah.
There are many senior devotees, and I just jump up, I'm going to be initiative,
yeah,
and I'm going to show how, you know, right, I feel inspired to do it.
Yeah.
Then it may be an inspiration, but if it's lacking the proper,
right,
the mood, then it may not be so successful.
True. And temple authorities have to regulate these things all the time. There's always someone who jumps up to the mic and goes, and that forces us to have rosters, right? Kirtan rosters, which are like killing all spontaneity. Finally, it's your day and you have a frog in your throat. Right? You know, what to do, you know? It's like... So, yes. It's
but on the other hand, if there's a good sense of the feeling, you know, if you're a family... There's a sense, then there's no problem at all.
Yeah.
I mean, people, there's like a little child who walks up to the microphone,
yeah,
and the family just starts to sing. The father doesn't go, wait a second, kid, you didn't ask me.
Yeah.
It feels very good that, you know,
yeah,
the person is.
Yeah, like my grandfather, he had a chair, you know, like a big armchair, that was his chair. And when he was there, you were not going to sit in his chair, you know. I mean, when he wasn't there, okay, you could sit a little in grandfather's chair, check it out, you know. But when he was there, he wouldn't dare to sit in his chair. No way, you know. It was his chair. It was really clear, you know. So, in a family, there are such things, you know. fathers oftentimes have a certain place at the dinner table, you know, and you know it, like, you know, kind of something is there in family life also, some respect for the parents, the father, and you can't just take up sometimes a little bit, not too much.
I remember one time I was talking with Bodhi, and he said that one, this was in the 1970 or something, 69, and one devotee was about to do something, and probably corrected him, and said, you can't do that. He said, there's a senior here. That was like, you know, senior meant maybe 1 or 2 years in the movement. Right. Prabhupada would actually consider that this person is actually senior, and he would show the proper respect.
Heavy duty. Okay, thank you very much. Shilpa Prabhupada ki jai.